Some of you may recall me mentioning a painting by the expressionist painter Emil Nolde. It's in a collection in the Museum of Modern Art in New York. It's entitled Christ Among the Children. And as is usually the case with Nolde's paintings, it's a brilliant, glowing collection of swirling forms and swirling colors. At the center of the painting is a robed green-blue Jesus standing with his back to the audience. And he's bent forward so that we see more of his back than anything else. He's picking up a child, a small child, who appears to be leaping into his arms. Surrounding Jesus and the child on the right side of the canvas are smiling faces, the forms of children. They look on, laughing, dancing, hands reaching forward as if they too hope to be encircled in Jesus' embrace. Mothers stand in the background, lifting their children as well, arms outstretched, high for Jesus to see. The right half of the painting in which the children and mothers stand, is bathed in swirling colors of red, yellow, and orange. They're warm to the glow, to the eye. On the left hand of the painting, one can make out the bearded faces of grown men. Two of them are engaged in a conversation with the other, likely discussing the interaction that's taking place in front of them between Jesus and the children. And it's not that they're disapproving of what's happening in front of them. Their faces are more distinct. It's hard to make out what their emotions are. It's almost as if they're not so much surprised or shocked as they are uncomprehending of what's going on right before their very eyes. Now, I mention that picture, obviously, because in this morning's gospel reading, we see that encounter of Jesus with a little child. Jesus and the disciples are in Capernaum. They're making their way to Jerusalem, making their way to the cross, making their way to Jesus' death. And knowing the disciples have rather stupidly been arguing along the way about who was the greatest among them, Jesus takes this child, draws the child into his arms and says, "You want to be first? You have to be last." And not only last, but least. Welcome a child like this, and you welcome me. Jesus identifies with the child, with the last and the least, the smallest, the most vulnerable. Basically, Jesus says, you want to be the greatest, you want to be Mr. Big, you want to be powerful, then start by giving it all up. In contradiction to the normal expectations of his day and of ours, Jesus turns everything upside down. We human beings have a tendency to assign value and importance to people who the world perceives as being powerful. We see power, for that matter, in terms of wealth and privilege, the ability to manipulate, to control. Basically, we figure that the only way for us to feel successful is for someone else to be at the bottom. The only way for us to be in control is if we're ordering someone else around. The only way for us to feel superior is by making someone else feel subordinate. Into such a domination power system, Jesus strides and says, forget it. That's not, in fact, the way it works. It's not now. It never has been. True greatness isn't about how much money you can move, how many flunkies you control, how many people know your name. True greatness comes from being and doing the will of God. And in case you haven't noticed it, most children are a whole lot more aware of what's important in life than most adults. Children know what it means to be vulnerable, to be weak, They know what it means to be completely and utterly dependent on the people around them. They know how fragile life is. And even in the face of that awareness, they still manage to find a whole lot more joy in life than most adults do. Those strong and independent ones. As I thought about this, I remembered my own childhood, a time I was in church. It was Sunday, late morning, early afternoon. Church was over. My parents had headed off home, and they headed off home without me. I'm sure each was thinking that the other had already gathered me up, or at least I hope that was the case. And I remember that sense of panic that grew within me as I wandered around that big, empty church building, realizing that I was all alone and forgotten, or at least I hope not. Of course, I knew that eventually someone would come looking for me. And even now, as I talk about it, I can almost feel the panic rising, the dependence and powerlessness palpable. And I'm sure all of us have had stories like that, set in a mall, set on a city street. And I'm also certain that many have far more sad and impossibly difficult stories than that to tell. Each of us knows what it means to be dependent. Each of us knows, if we stop and think about it, what it means to be powerless, what it means to be weak, forgotten, overlooked. As far as I can tell, that's what Jesus says is the key to leadership, the key to greatness in God's kingdom. And that's not a new interpretation of Jesus' self-understanding or our understanding of Christianity. Francis and Claire of Assisi taught it centuries ago. Martin of Tours resigned his commission in the army when he encountered Jesus in the face of the beggar. In the 19th and 20th century, Christian authors like F.D. Morris, C.S. Lewis, Paul Tillich, Dorothy Soleil have all embraced it. I think that the popularity of Pope Francis, who visits us in this country this week, that popularity is embedded in his well-articulated belief that God has a special place in God's heart for the weak, the vulnerable, the marginalized, whether they be refugees, undocumented immigrants, those living without food, shelter, safe neighborhoods to live in. People like this Pope because he speaks this message. And as Jesus is so quick to point out, it's because of that awareness of weakness and dependence that we can be empowered to serve others, to serve those who are without power, to champion the poor, the weak, the neglected. Our willingness to confront our own powerlessness, our willingness to embrace our own weakness, enables us to reach out and embrace others like that child. In that painting by Nolde, I mentioned that the men on the left of the painting look on not in shock or disgust, but in incomprehension, unable to conceive what it is that Jesus is doing. For many of us, that's exactly what we do. For many of us, ourselves, myself included, such a lack of comprehension is no stranger. So often I find myself attracted to worldly power, to prestige, to the pursuit of control, to security that's grounded in the subjugation of others. It is such a second nature to many of us that we fail to comprehend how it can be so contradictory to God's will and desire for us in our lives. We don't really have to look out into the world to see this kind of comprehension. We can look within ourselves. We can look within the church as well. The church is filled with its own games of power and prestige. who attends the biggest church, the congregation with the most money, with the most people, the movers and shakers. We assume that it is the goal and aspiration of every small church to be a big church. We assume that every deacon wants to be a priest, every priest a bishop, forgetting the servant nature of the church that's embedded in the life and ministry and death of Jesus. In our own day and age, it seems that the disciples of Jesus are just as caught up in that seeking, that argument about greatness as the disciples were so long ago. But when we stop and consider the joy portrayed in the faces of Nolde's children, when we stop and pause and peruse the exuberant spirit that shines in their eyes, I think we get a glimpse of God's hope for us. I think we get a glimpse in the shining joy of what God really hopes for humanity to be. A hope for a world where relationships are defined not by power, but by mutuality. Not by independence, but by interdependence. And that's my hope for this community. May it be the hope of every community of faith today and in all the days to come. Amen.